When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous, infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Hey, Paul. I'm glad you're not dead.
I'm glad I'm not dead, too. Although there was a few moments where I wished I was. Yes, we're back after a long hiatus because of me. I was very ill for a long time. And I hope my voice isn't distracting because I still have a little raspiness to it. And there's a dog barking in the background.
That's just one of our guest stars.
Yes, but this is our first recording of 2020, the year we see clearly. And we're only 3 weeks in, so we're right on top of stuff. So today on the program, we'll be discussing Dr. Aphra Volume 1 by Kieran Gillen with art by Kev Walker. But first, since this is a Star Wars-centric episode, Brian and I will be discussing the most recent entries into the Star Wars cinematic and televisual worlds. Rise of Skywalker and The Mandalorian. Not exactly timely, but what are you going to do? Let's start with Rise of Skywalker.
Okay.
Brian, you and I have not discussed this at all. So
no, we have not spoken yet of this.
No, we have not spoken of it. So I'm very interested to hear what your thoughts are. What did you think of Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker?
I thought it was fine. I mean, it's... Man, I get tired of the constant, you know, bitching and moaning about the Star Wars movies sometimes. I thought that the Rise of Skywalker was a nice end cap to the trilogies. We got a lot of the big moments that you would think fans would want, you know, and a lot of conclusions, and we got our explosions, and we got our lightsaber fights, and we got Han Solo, which I was kind of pleased with because, you know, the final appearance of Han Solo should not be him just falling off a bridge.
Oh, by the way, spoilers abound in this if you haven't seen it.
Right.
I doubt if anyone hasn't seen it yet, but Right. Continue.
We got Wedge. Thank you. Thank you, Star Wars.
I was actually happy
putting Wedge in the movie, even if it was for half a second.
Yeah, they kind of wedged him in there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Are there narrative problems? There's a ton of narrative problems in the film, but I always find it interesting. It's like all these people who expect the Star Wars films to be this great piece of cinematic art. And, you know, a lot of the criticisms that you hear about the Star Wars films and whatever, it's like, part of me wants to say, have you people watched the first Star Wars film, you know, A New Hope? Because my God, you know, that's my childhood, and I love that film dearly, but there's bad dialogue throughout that movie.
Oh, yeah, well, that's
there are Lucas. Right, and there are narrative problems all over the place in the first Star Wars film. So, and that's not putting the film down. It's we you know, that again, that's it's Star Wars, but then sort of holding up this sort of ideal as to what a Star Wars film should be, as if it should be Casablanca or Wings of Desire, you know, or something like that. It was like, no, that's not what the movie is. The movie is, you know, it's a sci-fi spacefaring action adventure movie with
It's a space. I'm not the person who came up with this, but it's a movie about space wizards meant for kids.
Right.
And I agree with you up to a point. I agree. Cause I thought the movie was fine as well. It was, you know, it was exciting, and it was kind of a fetch quest where we have to go here and get this thing, then we have to go here and get that thing. But what I was disappointed with was the fact that I really liked The Last Jedi. I know I'm the one guy who...
No, you're not the one guy. I'm with you on that as well. I appreciate the deconstruction in The Last Jedi.
Yeah, but there were some really, really interesting ideas set up in that. The idea that Rey isn't part of some royal bloodline.
Right.
That she was just a person who's able to, you know, to be a hero without having to be part of this dynasty.
Right.
I really like that idea, but
that was a populist. It was a populist tone that they jettisoned, no pun intended, in The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, so I was kind of disappointed with that, and just bringing the Emperor back kind of, I don't know. There was just sort of things like I was like, that's kind of a decision I don't really like.
Should they have come up with a better new big bad? Yes.
Yeah, but it's J.J. Abrams, and he just does that shit.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I enjoyed the movie for what it is. I, you know, as a fan of good writing, I just thought, you know, it would have been neat to see those ideas that Rian Johnson brought up mm-hmm. to be expanded upon and gone a little further.
Right.
Didn't happen. I'm not going to go ballistic on Twitter. Or
anything. Yeah, I mean, good writing has never specifically been a Star Wars trait,
right?
Like amongst all the films, and that's fine. You know, it's
yeah.
That's, you know, again, it's what is the intent? And, you know, I sat in a theater with my big ass, you know, jug of popcorn and had a hell of a time. You know, it was a lot of fun, and you know, it hit, like I said, it hit a lot of the happy buttons, let's call it, or what have you, yeah. that, you know, we kind of wanted. But, you know, there were still the Rey and Kylo, the kiss was weird.
That
was weird, but...
Yeah, there were some, as much as I don't like how J.J. Abrams writes a film, he does construct a film really well. So it looked great, and there were big moments where you kind of were entertained and shocked, and it was a fun thrill ride for a movie about space wizards.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, it's the last Star Wars movie. I mean,
it's not the last.
It won't be the last Star Wars movie, but anything going forward, I think we'll have a different focus. And I'm the person who thought the Rogue Rogue One.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites.
I like Rogue One a lot, actually. Yeah.
Because it was a heist film, and you know, it was like a lot of these films are heist films, sort of. But
I'm gonna put myself out on a limb here, and you know, I can already hear the comments. I liked Solo.
I like Solo too.
There you go. That's just a fun movie.
I really kind of I really wish that they could do a second film with that. I don't think they will.
No, I think that's out the window.
I mean, I think my overall, you know, take on the film was. It's fine. It's good. Is it great? Probably not. But, you know, I just think some folks need to settle the hell down and understand what they're watching, you know, check their expectations.
Yeah. So the other stormtrooper that that Finn befriends, is she Lando's daughter?
Hi, you know, isn't that interesting?
Because it's either she's Lando's daughter or Lando's being real creepy. It's one or the other.
But creepy is what Lando does,
I guess.
So that's not out of character. That's kind of what I thought. That was my first thought seeing that, was like, oh, I wonder if that's his daughter.
I think that's what they were trying to go with.
Way to take to explore another film. You know, the adventures of Lando and his daughter.
You know, if I want to get real nitpicky about. You know, stuff that bothered me was like the ship takes off with Chewie in it and it explodes and oh my God, Chewbacca just died. And then a second later, it's like, oh no, he was on another ship that you never saw.
Right.
I was like, okay.
There's a bunch of little things in there that, again, don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So you have to just kind of glaze over that and keep moving.
And maybe they just felt like they couldn't leave Chewbacca dead for too long.
Well, not with Rey basically killing him. That
right.
I mean, if they had done that, I would have said, ballsy move, guys. But yeah, that's not how Abrams rolls.
Mm-mm. Well, and I think you can't kill Luke, you can't kill Han, and you can't kill Princess Leia, and then also kill Chewbacca. I mean, you can.
You know, Princess Leia, there was kind of no other choice.
Yeah. Well, yes. Well, they didn't have to.
Yeah, that's true. I thought, you know, as far as that kind of, that technology looked great. Carrie Fisher looked like she was in those scenes.
Right.
You know, so, was, you know.
Yeah.
Kudos to the digital technology. It was a little
weird. The dialogue was weird.
Yeah.
I felt like I was reading, you know, a Hallmark card every time she spoke.
Yeah, it's obvious that, you know, that dialogue didn't really go with that scene.
Yeah, they often wouldn't show her face when she was speaking.
Yeah. But overall, I thought that was...
But it was done really with the blessing of her daughter and her estate. And so, you know, it's...
Yeah.
If anybody wants to complain about that, they can talk to her daughter.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess overall, my overall judgment of the film is it's good. But yeah. I wish a few other things had been explored.
Yeah. I think outside of the first Star Wars film, you know, A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, most of the films I wish had been done differently.
Well, yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's, you know, I'm going to continue to enjoy. I'm going to go back. Well, I don't know if I'm going to watch episodes 1, 2, and 3 ever. Yeah. 7, 8, and 9 are films I would be interested in going back to watch again.
Where I do go back to the prequels every once in a while, thinking they really can't be as bad as I remember them. I just want them to be so much better.
Right. That's another thing, like trying to compare this new trilogy to like the previous trilogy. If you want to talk about bad Star Wars, let's look at episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, so if you really want to hold a mirror up, these last three are not they're not as bad.
Yeah, I'm hoping
they restored a little bit of the fun and wonder that we felt as 5, 6, 7 year olds that first time we watched Star Wars.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm hoping, and I'm probably going to address this more when we get into the comic we're reading. We're done with the Skywalkers now. We're done with the Solos. And I would like to see new stories being told in this universe with new characters. Because, you know, the Star Wars universe is pretty rich. There's a lot of history and a lot of different races and just cool stuff.
Right.
And we've spent 9 movies now just focusing on the Skywalkers. I would like to be done with them.
And for the record, real quick, one of the things I want to say is Rey is not a Skywalker. You can't just like adopt the name and suddenly be a Skywalker.
Hey, but Ghost Luke and Ghost Leia said it was okay. And I guess Kylo was sort of, you know, crouching down behind them.
But yes, to your point, it's like there's this whole other great universe out there that can be explored. And I look forward to seeing what folks do with it, which I think potentially leads us to our next, our second half of this discussion.
Yes, we were trying to segue right into The Mandalorian.
Hooray.
Hooray. There you go. I loved this show.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic. I loved it that it was just short 30, 40 minute episodes. It did fan service right, where it put stuff in there. But it wasn't overt. Kind of like, I mean, Rise of Skywalker did fan service too, but it just seemed like, hey, look at this. Hey, look at this. Whereas in The Mandalorian, it felt organic to the story. Because yes, they went to Tatooine in one and they sat in the cantina bar. But that's where bounty hunters go.
It made sense.
Yeah.
It fit the story.
Exactly.
And I mean, you know, obviously everybody wants to talk about Baby Yoda, and I'm calling him Baby Yoda.
Yes, I think that's
until they give him a damn, until they give him a name or name the species, he's Baby Yoda. Anybody wants to complain about it, they can just go back to their basement and eat their Cheetos, because it's like
I think it's pretty much established that he's just
But you know, and of course it's the Baby Yoda part is great, and it brings up a lot of questions, which I think is the most important thing. Is as adorable as he is in the world, it also brings up questions, and it brings up, it's an interesting narrative device.
Yeah. And there's the other kind of theme that runs through there. That's not overt is, you know, here's this innocent little baby and he's being raised essentially by incredibly violent people. So you see him starting to, you know, take those characteristics on. That'd be interesting to see how it goes in the second season, you know, how that's incorporated.
But all the stories, like one person as it was going through, one of the complaints I heard was that they just seemed like one-off episodes, and there wasn't a bigger plan to the series. And I think that criticism has been largely negated once we get to the final episode, and we see like a lot of what we think are just kind of one-off episodes starting to tie together.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with a one-off episode. That's
it establishes the character,
the world.
You know, not every episode of The Office tied together to the next.
That's true.
You know what? And if we want to talk about actors or actresses who are, can we just say Werner Herzog?
He was great.
Yes. I mean, it's, and apparently had a blast doing it by all accounts.
Yeah.
It's Werner Herzog. Werner Herzog is in a Star Wars TV show.
Absolutely brilliant. Oh, here's something that I absolutely loved. So the thing he gets his reward in that Werner Herzog gives him, gives the Mandalorian all his...
The medal.
Yeah. And it's in an ice cream maker. I don't know. That's what that is. It's just a jazzed up ice cream maker. The thing that makes that great is there's a scene in Empire Strikes Back where everyone's escaping Cloud City and someone runs by with this ice cream maker in their hand. And it's been pointed out many times, like, why is that person running with an ice cream maker? And they incorporated it into the show to say, oh no, it holds money. So I just was like, sweet.
See, this I did not catch at all.
Oh, there's so many little details that they throw in.
Well, yeah, there's lots of, and that's the other fun thing is, like, I think what the Mandalorian did it right in that you have all these little Easter eggs here and there that you are not required to understand them to enjoy the show.
Exactly. Oh yeah, you don't need to know. They're literally what Easter eggs should be. If you see it, you go, oh, that's cool.
You get some of the silly, obvious stuff. I mean, the two stormtroopers, Jason Sudeikis was one of them, right? In the last,
right.
And their target practice.
Yeah, well, that's, have you ever seen...
Which was not subtle, but was it didn't have to be. It was hilarious.
Yeah, have you seen Tag and Bink?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I've heard people say...
That's who it is.
Yeah, people are saying that's, or who it's supposed to be, or homage to, or something like that.
And well, that kind of makes sense. Well, that's kind of they just reissued a few months ago, and I wonder if they were thinking about this. And they just released reissued like a kind of a 100-page comic or whatever the Marvel did through Star Wars that collected all of their kind of issues, of their stories,
they're lovely. They're so much fun.
Of course, they're hilarious. You know,
yeah, they're so fun. They're
ridiculous.
Yeah, so I love little stuff like that.
But the overall story, and it's really interesting. I mean, there's lots of great scenes, like some of them we mentioned, but, the entire, troop of bounty hunters, of Boba Fett's.
Yes.
Jetpacks, and, I mean, that was great. I mean, you're just watching that, and anyone who's a fan is just, it's fangasm.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it serves the plot, and it's not just thrown in there just to be like, oh, man, we've got a whole bunch of Boba Fetts. I know Mandalorians, but...
well, that's... There's talk of Boba Fett showing up in the next series.
Well, it's that, who was that mysterious, footsteps and all of that. And if it's Boba Fett, cool. If it's not, that's cool, too.
I think it's the general from the end. Also... You haven't watched Clone Wars, I take it.
No.
Okay. So there's a whole Mandalorian subplot in Clone Wars where there's an ancient lightsaber, it's called the Darksaber, that the only Mandalorian Jedi once carried.
Right.
And that's been passed down from person to person. So, and that shows leadership of the Mandalorians if you hold the Darksaber. And the very last scene is, I forget, what's the general's name, who gets shot down?
I don't
yeah. remember. Yeah, but anyway, he cuts himself out with the Darksaber. Ah, it was so cool. They're tying in the movies and they're tying in the animated shows. There's nods to Rebels. It's really well done. Yeah, so I was very pleased with the series. I think it's a great series. I have spoken.
I agree. I think most folks do. I haven't really seen a lot of negative reaction to it.
No, I haven't. The only thing I've seen that's negative was the episode where they have to teach the villagers how to fight.
Right.
Which is an old Western trope.
Right. Well, it's an old Kurosawa.
Kurosawa, exactly, Seven Samurai. Yeah. But people were online were saying, oh, of course the woman knows how to shoot and she's the one who has the guns because this is a woke show. And I was like, have you guys never... I know, it's like, have you never seen a Western? The widow always knows how to shoot.
And that type of crap isn't even worth addressing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, comic skaters can just go shut themselves up in a closet somewhere.
In a cell, let's say.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I want to see Ming-Na Wen come back. She was killed off pretty quickly in that one episode.
Yeah, I don't think she's dead.
Nah. She's too big of a star.
Yeah, why would, yeah, you don't bring her in and then,
you know. You don't kill Agent May just in one episode. That was an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. reference, which you would not get.
Which I would not get since I am.
All right. I think overall, Rise of Skywalker, meh. And
Mandalorian.
Yay.
Four thumbs up.
That's right. Four thumbs up. Boy, I should get one of those removed. Or possibly two. All right, so I think that's it. Let's move on to the main topic. But first, we'll have a little break.
The Swamp. More than merely a place. It is a churning, seething, bubbling bed of life of which you are a part. Once you were a man, a chemist named Ted Salas, until one little experiment went somewhat awry. And you changed. The serum that was to have made you a super soldier combined with the strange forces in the swamp to make you over into this, a shambling, mindless mockery of your former humanity. The macabre Man-Thing.
Man-Thing was created in the early 1970s to capitalize on the growing monster craze, but under writer Steve Gerber, it became something quite different. Experimental, surreal, and very, very weird. It was something I loved as a kid, but does it still hold up today, 4 decades after its initial publication? So join me, Paul Matthew Carr, as I attempt to make sense of this cult classic and analyze each issue, putting it in the context of the time it was written and comparing it to the standards of today. And maybe you, too, can come to love the world's second most famous swamp-based comic book character as much as I do. The Nexus of All Realities, a Man-Thing podcast, a twice-monthly dive into the bizarre.
And we're back. So today, on our exciting podcast, The Collected Edition, we will be talking about Dr. Aphra, or Dr. Aphra. Paul, this was your recommendation. Would you like to tell us a little bit about Dr. Aphra?
Will do. The Star Wars Extended Universe was a vast, complicated, often convoluted thing. So when Disney acquired Lucasfilm in 2012, the Extended Universe was scrapped in order to have a relatively fresh start, so that new storylines and new characters could be introduced. And the first new character to really make an impact was Dr. Aphra. Created by Kieran Gillen and artist Salvador LaRocca, Dr. Aphra is an archaeologist adventurer, much like Indiana Jones, if Indiana Jones was morally fluid and ethically challenged. She first appeared in Darth Vader number 3, where she worked for Vader with a reluctant enthusiasm, until ultimately she betrays and escapes Vader, which is where we find her at the start of her own series. Aphra is intending to sell an artifact she acquired by dubious means, and finds that she can't do it legitimately because her doctorate has been revoked by none other than her father.
Dun, dun, dun!
That's exactly what I was waiting for. This is done as blackmail to get Aphra to help him find a temple of a heretical Jedi order searching for eternal life. And so Aphra, her father, along with her merry band of murder droids and a Wookiee bounty hunter, set off on their quest, followed closely by the Empire. It seems a straightforward story, but it's complicated by Aphra's unpredictable nature. Dr. Aphra is something unique in Star Wars, a character that defies traditional roles. She is witty and sarcastic, she is brave but ruthless, she is honorable and duplicitous. She is new and different, and that is exactly what Star Wars needed. So, Brian, what do you think of Dr. Aphra?
Oh, well, I love the character. So one of the things I love about Dr. Aphra is the idea, like when we go back to EC Comics and we go back to Werther's Seduction of the Innocent. And so how, you know, he wrote this horrible book about how comic books are destroying kids and the juvenile delinquency and all of these terrible things that comics were responsible for. And of course, what that led to was the formation of the comic code.
Exactly.
Some of the many rules, there were all these rules about how you could write characters, and particularly superhero characters and horror comics. You know, the main character, the protagonist, as it were, of any comic book that was made had to A, always win and overcome evil, but had to be these morally upstanding characters or these morally upstanding stereotypes or what have you. You couldn't have an ambiguous protagonist in a comic book. Dr. Aphra is everything that her character would not have been viable in the comics code years.
Oh, absolutely not. She's
horrible. Wonderfully horrible.
And that's the thing, is she's so terrible and at the same time so incredibly likable.
Yeah.
I love her snarky attitude and she's just flat out funny, but she's just doing terrible. She'll stab you in the back for no reason at all. It just if it can, you know, get her out of a little bit of danger or make a little extra money.
Right. And or mostly to get herself out of danger.
Yeah.
And she's willing to sacrifice anybody around her.
Including her father.
Including her father to do so. And what's great about this story arc is I don't think this is the strongest Dr. Aphra story arc that is out there. But it's a good one for us to do and talk about as because this is the beginning of her solo comic.
Exactly. That's why I chose it, just because it's the beginning. But it also gives you a good introduction to who she is as a character. You're not being bombarded by this. Like I said in the introduction, it's a very simple, straightforward story. Again, like it's a fetch quest. You have to go and get this thing in order to get that other thing.
Right.
But along the way, the idea is that you get to see who she is, and you get to see who her companions are.
And it's a great introduction to her if someone hadn't been reading Darth Vader.
Right.
And I realize that sounds kind of wacky that someone would be starting with a Dr. Aphra series who has not read Darth Vader. But I think her character became so popular and reached out beyond the comic book world that there probably were a good amount of people who were picking this up who weren't necessarily reading Darth Vader.
Yeah, I think so, because she was such a breakout character in the Darth Vader series. I immediately fell in love with this character during that series, which is why I automatically started picking it up when her solo series was announced. But you're right, because she became so popular, I think a lot of people just sort of jumped. A lot of people might have jumped on just with this series.
Right. People who weren't even Star Wars fans. You know, you're basically a very strong female lead.
Of all the characters that could, you know, from the animated series or comics that could make it into live action, I think Dr. Aphra would make just a fantastic film or TV show.
Well, I think it's astonishing that the properties haven't used her in any way, shape, or form outside of comics.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think, has there been a novel?
Maybe.
I don't know. There's been a lot of novels.
I don't follow the novelizations, so.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people would say Ahsoka, but, you know, I think Dr. Aphra is the strongest character and the most interesting character. Because of her, you know, morally and ethical fluidity, not fluency.
Well, she's fluent in being ethically fluid.
I hope I can fix this. Okay. But because of that, she's just so, all of her stories become that much more interesting because you don't know what she's going to do. There's a thing in the back of your mind where you say, okay, I know she's going to do the right thing eventually, but she doesn't always.
Doesn't always. And when she does do the right thing,
it could be for the wrong reasons.
It could be for the wrong reasons. Or she does the right thing, but then turns around and continues on with, her dubious agendas.
Yes. And we see that in this arc where it seems like she's, to jump ahead to the end, she steals a giant crystal, which may or may not have the soul of a evil Jedi in it. I'm not really sure how that worked. But she says she puts it away in this archive where it'll be completely safe, but did a sleight of hand and actually took the real thing and gave away a fake. Yeah, so she does actually double-cross people.
Constantly. She triple-crosses. She quadruple-crosses.
Yeah, it's so interesting because she's... As a character, she's incredibly competent. She knows what she's doing. But at the same time, it seems like...
In the fight?
Well, just she keeps getting herself in deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper until...
Well, it's part of the comic nature is that she
well, yeah.
never extricate herself. And it is, it's just like throughout that series, it's just, she spirals constantly.
Yes. And she's smart enough to get herself out of one sticky situation, which drops her into an even greater one.
Right.
And then she has to scramble to get herself out of that, you know, and it's so interesting to read and see how she develops because she, you know, she is a conflicted character. But that's what makes Dr. Aphra so unique and so compelling as a character, at least to me. She's completely conflicted and she's all over the board. And then when you tie into the fact that she has just these two wonderfully awful companions, she looks relatively sane in comparison.
Well, yeah, BT and Triple Zero.
Yes.
Who are also wonderful creations. I mean, literally... The dark mirror image of C-3PO and R2-D2.
And the level of cruelty of these two characters.
Triple Zero is also becomes a bit conflicted. And as you go further on the series, we don't want to get too far into, you know, we want to focus on this particular story. But, you know, even droids, like... There is not so much BT, but Triple Zero definitely, as the character arc goes on throughout the series, develops something akin to a bit of a conscience.
Something of a conscience.
Yeah. not a conscience, like, to do the right thing, but trying to think how to describe it without, getting too far outside the story we're talking about. But occasionally, even Triple Zero will do the right thing.
Sort of. He develops attachments.
Right. Yeah. Maybe that's there. That's a better word for it. Attachments.
Yeah. So he begins to have a fondness for Aphra eventually, against his better nature.
Right.
Triple Zero has a wonderful moment when Aphra says that he can torture her father, and then stops him, and she says, "Did you just torture tease me?"
Right. he gets some of the best, Triple Zero gets some of the best lines. He also has one where he's like trying to talk to some other droids and he just, he's like, I loathe making small talk with career droids.
Exactly. Yeah, he has that same smugness that C-3PO has, but with a malevolence underlying everything he says. They really are brilliant characters. And I'm not one to usually like the what if somebody but evil.
Right.
Which is exactly what they are. It's what if C-3PO and R2-D2, but they're evil. But they're done so well, and they're given such a unique personality that it works.
And some of that is obviously a credit to Kieran Gillen as a writer too. We have to remember that we're talking about one of the great writers of this generation who is doing these comics.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, and I think Cy Spurrier did a really good job once Gillen left and Spurrier took over to end the series as it just ended last month. Although I believe there's another series coming down the line.
Yeah, those are the two top tier writers at Marvel right now. Jason Aaron, of course, as well. Yeah, I mean, I think with the new launch of the Star Wars titles, that's one thing Marvel got right. They put the right people and the right artists in the right places so that things like this can develop. And as I was saying during our discussion on Rise of Skywalker, I really appreciate this comic and this character for being, yes, it's still in the middle of the rebellion. It's set between New Hope and Empire. So you still have that, all the trappings of the Skywalker saga, but she's doing different things within it. And I really appreciate that. I want to see greater, larger storytelling in the Star Wars world so that we can...
I think Dr. Aphra provides that. I mean, we still have the time. So the collected edition we read also goes on. So you have the first six issues, which is this, her and her father and her, like you said, merry band of murderous droids and whatnot. So going forth and trying to attain... various things for various reasons. They're all on this for different reasons. But the prize that they get at the end, this crystal that's supposed to contain the soul of the evil Jedi, carries over into... So in the collected edition, we had these six issues. And then we had the crossover that was done with Dr. Aphra and Star Wars, the Screaming Citadel,
Yeah, which, so you get Luke and Leia. And
so it brings back in. Now, Aphra has met all of them before, but it ties into, so this crystal actually, or whatever it is, ties in to the crossover with the regular folks in the Star Wars universe, the one we're all familiar with.
Exactly. And we're not really going to get into the Screaming Citadel right now.
Yeah, I just read that once, so I didn't.
Well, I mean, it you know, it's a crossover with several other ongoings there. So,
but it does present Aphra in the Star Wars universe proper too. So it shows her connection to the events that are happening there, and also, you know, with Luke in particular as a young Jedi, and her interaction with him is also very, very interesting, shall we say?
Yeah, but I'm more drawn to the things outside of what the Skywalkers are doing, be it Luke or Darth. But at the same time, I mean, like I said, I keep saying that she does things outside the world, the Star Wars saga. At the same time, they do show up on Yavin 4, which is
right. And this story actually presents a very interesting take on Yavin 4.
How so?
Well, we find out that where the rebels were staying, the hideout that they had on Yavin 4 is actually a temple.
Yeah.
A Jedi temple that contained a lot of important information that the rebels just apparently didn't realize was there.
Yeah, they don't really explore their basements very often. The rebels.
No, huh? But it's very interesting. It's almost, I don't want to say humorous, but you know, the fact that you know, this abandoned hideout that was the sort of main base of operations in Star Wars for the rebels actually contained more treasures that they probably could have used.
Yeah, that's true. And well, to be fair, the Empire didn't seem too keen on finding it either.
No, huh? But I think, but what is interesting also about this is, you know, so talking about the rebels versus the Empire and whatnot is Aphra's ability to straddle both sides. And she calls out the hypocrisy on both sides.
It's true. I mean,
there's good people on both sides.
Well, no, her point is there are bad people on both sides.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Which makes her the easiest comparison to make is her and Han Solo. But she's what Han Solo would be if he shot first.
He did shoot first.
Did he though? Did he really?
Yeah.
Look, let's just say McCulkey and move on, shall we?
But she is. It's interesting. So Dr. Aphra is basically Harrison Ford.
Yes, but a much more interesting version, I think, because, you know, it's always hinted at that Han would do anything to, you know, to make his way and to get what he needs. But that doesn't always pan out. Aphra will do anything she has to get what she needs, and does. And at the same time, you get, you know, that scene with her father at the end, or towards the end. It's a surprisingly touching scene. Where he opens up and he confesses the things he's done wrong and why he did things. And,
right.
You know, they talk about their feelings, but just as her father's going to tell her how to get her doctorate back, she says, "Stop, don't tell me, because, you know, what, how does she put it? Once I don't have a gun to my head, then I don't need you." And that's so cold. You know, first of all, it's good writing, but it just stopped me in my tracks. Like, wow, that's your dad. Don't stop blackmailing me, because I'll have to kill you.
Well, and I think one of the other great things about this this story arc is it also introduces us to Captain Tolvin, who I think ultimately ends up being Aphra's, maybe her greatest love, and yes. Of course, much wacky adventures with the two ensue later on in the series. But this is certainly it's Tolvin, I think, who gives Aphra the most conflict.
Yes, because Tolvin, I mean, Aphra essentially destroys Tolvin's career.
Several times.
But at the same time, pushes Tolvin forward so that she actually becomes a better person. Now I'm getting way down the storyline a little bit. Right. It's kind of a shame we're not talking about the entire Dr. Aphra arc. It's really impressive.
It was a lot of comic reading.
You know, I thought the first six issues would be, you know, a nice contained.
Well, but story. I think it lays a nice base for, like, again, the introduction of Captain Tolvin, and you already see that. So Aphra's clearly, this sets the stage for what happens later with, right. with Tolvin. I mean, the fact that Aphra won't kill Tolvin, but just leaves her on a planet, it starts to show like a character development in terms of Aphra's feelings towards Tolvin, even though they barely interacted.
Yeah. Well, there's that throwaway line where she just says, I would have killed you, but you're cute. So. Mm-hmm. Which, another thing, openly gay character, not even, it's not like it's a thing, you know? It's just right. it's just presented as this is who she is, and that's that, which is great. You know, I love that. This is a galaxy far, far away. We shouldn't be held to the same moral constraints as we are here in 2020. No, but I just, there's so many aspects to Aphra's character. I mean, she's so rich, and there's just, you know, the more you read of this series, the more you just kind of fall in love with her, even when she's being awful, and she's awful a lot, but she's so charming about it. You have to admit that the comparisons between her and Indiana Jones are pretty obvious, the same archetype or archaeology type.
Well, and some of the setup in this story is also very Raiders of the Lost Ark-y too.
Yeah, the opening scene, of course, stealing the little, you know, little figurine that looks a lot like the same thing in the beginning of Raiders.
Right.
With the difference being, you think it's Aphra who's stealing this thing, but it's actually another guy who she just shoots and takes it. it's brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
Should we talk about Black, however you pronounce his name?
Kerstantan?
It's Stanton,
which is another great creation, is, you know, the Black Wookiee, you know, it's like, yeah, the Dark Wookiee, or
yeah, well, it's another what if Chewbacca but evil, but it works,
and again, it's just turning everything upside down, and then instead of just following the obvious parallels, it takes it into its own world, and you know, it's again, it's another intriguing character. I like it fine. I'm more invested in Triple Zero and BT.
Well, yeah, I am as well. And Black Kerstantan actually does show up quite a bit in the Star Wars ongoing,
right?
You know, because he's a obvious foil for Chewbacca. But still good here. The only reason he's sticking around is because Aphra owes him money. So he's protecting her so that she'll be able to get money to pay him back, which is kind of circular logic, but it works.
Well, and it just shows the type of crowd she hangs around with.
Yes, exactly. Because when the going gets rough, they all steal her ship and take off.
And then they just come back and find her later.
You know, the real beauty of this story arc, I'd love to go into little bits and pieces of how the story goes, but it's not, I don't want to say it's not interesting, but it's pretty simple and straightforward.
Right.
It's really how the characters interact with each other and the dialogue and just a little back and forth between everyone.
That's, I mean, it is intriguing in that it introduces the concept, you know, it introduces some interesting concepts about the Jedi. Because it introduces this, the Ordu Aspectu.
God bless you.
Yes. Which shows another facet of the Jedi that is may have been discussed in novelizations or other comics that I haven't read. But to me, this was a very interesting take on, you know, it's a sect within the Jedi.
Right. And, you know, I really, other media, either the novels, the comics, the animated shows, they really take on the myth and lore of the Jedi much more than the movies have.
Right.
I guess that's another reason why I was slightly disappointed with Rise of Skywalker, which was, it seemed that The Last Jedi was opening up this middle path and other ways to be a Force user instead of just Jedi Sith, black and white. And,
right.
You know, you're either one or the other. There's so many more ways to go. And Rise of Skywalker just sort of did away with all that. Mm-hmm. Whereas you see in some of the, especially things like Rebels and Clone Wars, you start seeing other people, like either sects of the Jedi. That's sects of the Jedi.
S-E-C-T-S.
Exactly.
Not that the Jedis can't be sexy.
Well, they're not allowed to do that, are they?
But they could still be sexy.
They're too sexy for their robes.
There's something about a Jedi with a lightsaber.
Wait, is that lightsaber purple?
Just a doctor? Maybe Dr. Aphra?
Moving on. I lost my train of thought. No, but there's there's other ways to be someone who uses the Force than just Jedi Sith, and this is a great example of that, where they're Jedi, but they're seen as heretical because they want to go in a different direction.
Right. They're looking for life eternal. And what's interesting about this, is, of course, is that the big bad, or I don't know if it's really the big bad, but, you know, it's a Roar.
Yeah.
Roar. The Jedi who is sort of leading this Ordu Aspectu. is looking for life eternal. And, of course, it turns out that his life eternal is to become an AI. He puts himself in it. So that's kind of a switch. That's kind of a, you know, it's the big sort of reveal, is that he didn't find it by achieving eternal life via the Force. He found it by just inserting himself into machines. Now, that's not a new idea, but it is intriguing in this particular issue, or in these particular issues, because we're led to believe it's something else. And it's so the sort of heretical nature of what he's doing is by using machines, and that's the heresy.
Exactly. So he's not physically continuing, and he's not becoming a Force ghost or anything like that. Yeah. So he becomes a droid, basically.
Right.
Which is really, see, that's really interesting. And this, you know, again, it gets back to that there's so much in the Star Wars, you know, universe. There's so many nooks and crannies and ideas that can be played with. And stories like Dr. Aphra allow these things to grow and take shape.
You know? And make no mistake, this is good comics. These six issues that we're covering, we're doing Dr. Aphra issues 1 through 6, and it's really good comics. It's really fun comics. And, you know, we get, obviously we're talking a lot about the characterization as opposed to the overall story. It's a fun story. It's a big bang-em-up space opera with a lot of like entertaining moments that aren't just characterization. And plot-wise, it's, like you said, it's a standard plot, but it's also done well with enough twists and turns and surprises. Like, again, like we're finding out that Roar is a machine. Well, not even a machine. Like he inhabits the machines, but then he is also in this crystal that Aphra steals at the very end and doesn't put in quarantine. You know, we get an introduction of a lot of Dr. Tolvin and some other interesting characters, but we also see, like, within the story, we see Hal Tolvin acts as a commander of the stormtroopers and on the Imperial side. And it is, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's full of a lot of very fun action sequences that are not, are not deep plot, but are vastly entertaining plots. So I feel like we should acknowledge that these six issues are very fun to read and should be read, not just on characterization, but on as a narrative as well.
Absolutely. And there's some great set pieces and just, you know, artistically, there's some really great images in this. Like at one point where they're standing on a ledge, and they're confronted by a walker, you know, that turns its head and looks right at them. That's a really great shot.
And Kev Walker does some great facial expressions.
Definitely.
So it's, you know, there's a lot of that. And also, like, creating the universe. I mean, I think Kev Walker does a really good job, like, visually, like, both landlocked and in space and in space battles. And, you know, there's a beautiful scene where they arrive at the Citadel of Roar. Like, so this is the place that they're trying to find. And so they're going to all these various places, Yavin, Four, and all these other places, trying to find clues as to how to find the Citadel of Roar, where Roar, I hate that its name is Roar. It just sounds like
That's like you're starting your car. Citadel.
So when they finally find this, of course, it's like this half moon, and it's a citadel, and it's a beautiful.
Yeah, it's an asteroid. It's an asteroid with this kind of castle looking thing, kind of almost growing out of it. Yeah, it's really quite beautiful to look at.
I was kind of looking for Thanos on it.
But... Later, this was a long, long time ago.
Oh God, remember. Disney's gonna like, there's gonna be a crossover at some point, isn't there?
Oh, years ago I would have said absolutely no way, but now, maybe, I don't know.
Neither here nor there. But yes. so it's, this is good storytelling. It's, you know, I highly recommend, you know, people following the entirety of Dr. Aphra. But if you don't want to read all the Darth Vaders, or if you haven't, I mean, this is a really good starting point. It really, it's a fun story. It's an adventure story. And again, with all the characterization. So I don't want to give the plot a short shrift while we just talk about, you know.
No, absolutely.
Great characters.
Yeah, I mean, no, this is the real deal. It's got great art. It's a good story. It has fantastic snappy dialogue. Yeah, this is a really good story. I'm particularly focusing on Aphra as a character because she's so different in Star Wars.
Yes.
You know, just in Star Wars in general, everyone kind of falls into these archetypes of, you know, the good person. Even Han Solo, who's supposed to be the rogue, he's just a hero with a couple of flaws.
Right.
Yeah, but the reason I'm focusing on Aphra...
The heart of gold.
Exactly. Yeah, the rogue with the heart of gold. But Aphra is so different because of her moral ambiguity. You know, and that's what really drew me to her in the first place. And I do like the fact that she's not sexualized in these comics, you know, I mean, like hyper-sexualized and so forth.
Sure. Well,
you know, what I mean? She's just a competent woman doing her job.
Well, and I don't, Guillen wouldn't be one of the writers who would do that to begin with, but her as a sexual being is not ignored either.
Oh, no, that's not what I mean though. I mean, you know, she does have relationships and she does.
But she doesn't have, you know, impossibly sized top half whilst running around in high heels. And yeah.
Yeah. She's not dressed like Morgan Le Fay from Camelot 3000.
Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah. We never did discuss that, but probably for the best.
We mentioned it. I think we mentioned it in the episode.
She's not, the Emma Frost.
Exactly. That's kind of what I was getting at. I like the fact that she's just presented as a woman doing her job.
Right.
You know, and being very good at it. And, you know, the great overall thing, I really, really want to see Star Wars kind of embrace more unusual characters and unusual situations, get out of the, you know, that first trilogy time period, mm-hmm. you know, and get into different areas so we can start opening up the story. I'm really hoping that now that Rise of Skywalker is done, we can get into the future. Because no one could ever pass where the movies were at,
right? You know? And I'm hoping that's we don't know, we have no idea what became of Dr. Aphra. Her story is continuing,
right?
As we mentioned this at the beginning too, but it's worth revisiting. It's, you know, she has not appeared in any of the films, or so, you know, her fate is still up in the air.
Yeah. You know, I think
you kind of have a feeling she's headed for a bad end, but she's also maybe the luckiest person in the entire
She always seems to be able to get herself out of the worst situations, which is endearing, but also gives you hope for this character to be appearing in other things. You
know? I mean,
but as long as the comic keeps going on, I'm perfectly happy.
Yeah, and I mean, it is relaunching again in a few months, couple months with a different creative team.
And a number one, baby.
And a new number one from Marvel. A new number one from Marvel. I can't. That's so surprising.
Yeah. So she called her Dr. Alpha because it's one.
Yeah. And then they'll have six issues and then relaunch again with a new number one.
Hey, this went quite a while without a number one.
I think they have been allowing the Star Wars. You know, I mean, we have a new we have a new Star Wars number one again. We have a new Darth Vader number one coming. I get it. In some points, and I'm hoping like this next number one means a change in time.
I hope so too.
And that it moves forward, because this takes place between Star Wars.
Yeah, New Hope and Empire. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Star Wars is always Star Wars.
I know. I know. But just for the sake of clarification.
Right. A New Hope and Empire. And I would be very curious. I'm kind of hoping that the next series, as the Star Wars comic has moved from A New Hope, from being between A New Hope and Empire, the new relaunch Star Wars, which actually makes sense to launch it as a number one if you're going to go from, now that's going to be between Empire and Return, maybe let's take Dr. Aphra there as well.
I'd like to see what she does after Return of the Jedi. You know,
and if we're really lucky, we'll find out that Dr. Aphra is buried somewhere in Rise of Skywalker, like in one of the big crowd scenes, and nobody's spotted her yet.
Yeah, you know, you can see her ship. There's a lot of little, in that final scene in Rise of Skywalker where all those ships are showing up, there's a lot of Easter eggs in there. From the show Star Wars Rebels, the ghost ship, the main ship in that is called the Ghost, and that's there, which I saw and was like, okay, good for you guys, acknowledging other things. So maybe she is there.
I was just too busy getting excited over Wedge, so.
Excited over Wedge.
Someone has to be excited for Wedge. And I'm willing to take that. I'm willing to be that person. I'm there for Wedge.
Yeah. All right. If I were to write fanfic for Star Wars, which I've never done, shockingly, I would have her show up in The Mandalorian. It's the right time period.
Ooh.
And she's the right kind of person to be in that show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
They should hire you immediately, Paul.
Yes. Lucasfilm, Marvel, not Marvel, Disney. I'm available. I got the ideas. Anywho, she's a great character. This is a good book.
And we love Dr. Aphra.
We do. I think she's one of the most unique characters to come out of Star Wars. And I really hope that...
In comics, in general.
Yeah. And I really hope that she continues and that they continue to develop her and make it more intriguing. Keep good writers on the book.
And now that we said this, they'll kill her off in a couple months.
Oh, God. Do you have any more to say?
I don't. This has been a love fest.
It really has. We haven't done a love fest in quite a while, and, you know, I think we need it.
Yeah, we've been a little contentious lately.
We have. Even when we've been liking stuff, we've been kind of attacking it, which I find intriguing. We say terrible things for an hour and then say, by the way, I love this. But no, I really do like Dr. Aphra. I do want to say there is one line in this where she's stealing all the lightsabers, and they say, you're grave robbing, and she says, archaeology is just grave robbing with fancy paperwork.
Yep.
Good stuff. But yes, I think everyone should read Dr. Aphra, not just this first six issues, but the entire run, because it just keeps getting better. And Star Wars. Let's just like Star Wars for being Star Wars.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, Brian.
That's what we got.
I think that's all we got. Brian, what do we got next time on an all-new collected edition?
Oh, we're gonna get a little adventurous.
A little adventurous. I'm excited.
A little adventurous. We're not gonna really be thinking outside the box. We're gonna stick with the. Actually, this may surprise folks, just because Marvel is not always my first go-to. I have decided that I would like us to talk about the Kree-Skrull War, Avengers, issue 89-97, written by Roy Thomas with art by Sal and John Buscema and the great Neil Adams.
That's so exciting.
Yep. Ah. We're going to do it. We're going to do the Kree-Skrull War.
Where do we start? Is this going to be a two-parter?
No, I think this will be a single.
Okay.
Remember, well, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but remember that Event Comics in 1971 and 1972, which was the publication date of these, remember that these were not quite as wide-ranging as we have with Event Comics now. Meaning
that's true.
Yes. Meaning that we will read the issues and we don't have to read 50 other comics.
Yeah, we don't have to read sundry other stuff. At the same time, this is big for the universe.
It is.
For the Marvel Universe. This was a big darn deal.
Well, some would historically speaking, some folks may have different opinions, but is this the first true event comic?
Hmm.
I'm not saying it is or isn't.
I don't know. Let's put that out there on Twitter and see if anyone has an opinion.
I have some opinions on other issues or other other comics and other things, but I am always very curious as to what folks think is the first kind of true event comic. By event comic, I don't mean the death of Gwen Stacy or something like that.
Oh, no. I know exactly what you mean. Like a big crossover event.
A large, you know, extended piece. I mean, all Marvel comics, particularly in that time period, are soap operas by nature. So everything carries on from issue to issue. But this I don't know. If people on Twitter wish to weigh in, I would be very interested to see what other people have to say. I'd be very curious.
I'm going to put that question out there and see what everyone thinks. Yeah, that's great.
I bet we could get some great responses that I would.
Yeah, I would love that. So everyone, I'll post this on Twitter as well, but was the Kree-Skrull War the first major comic book event comic? Comic book event comic. That's impressive. Impressive way to put it.
I'm kind of excited for like some of the answers because that may lead me to read some other stuff too.
Yeah.
Or may remind me of other stuff that I've forgotten about.
So also in February, so we're going to do this through the Kree-Skrull War. And then the next episode after that is going to be a listener recommendation.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And then we'll...
don't tell us what it is.
I won't. I'm not going to tell you, you know. I can tell you what it is just yet.
You tell me once we're done recording.
Yes, but yeah. So I think that, I mean, we really want to get everyone. If you have a recommendation, let us know on Twitter or send us an email so that we. So my plan our plan going forward is that we'll do my recommendation, Brian's recommendation, listener recommendation.
Nice.
Yeah, and if we don't have a listener recommendation, then we'll just do us.
Yeah.
But yeah. So if anyone wants us to talk about something, anything at all, let us know, and we'll do it.
It's technically not our first reader recommendation.
Oh, yeah, it's technically not our first. You are correct. Yeah. Technically not our first, because the Judge Dredd episode was our first listener recommendation.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I had forgotten.
But now we know.
But the more you know. But yeah, so but really, we want your recommendations. Please send them in. Yeah, let us know all your thoughts and feedbacks at Twitter's the best way to get to us. To get to us. Twitter gets to me, man.
Yeah, definitely the best way to get to me.
All right. And that's Collected Ed Pod. That's Collected EDPOD. And also, you can send us an email at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. You can also check out the website where we'll have new and exciting things. Now that I'm a healthy person, I'm going to start working on the website again.
And our Tinder, LinkedIn, and Instagram accounts will be coming shortly.
Tinder? Yes, absolutely. We're going to be getting those worked out.
Collected Edition on Tinder.
Collected Edition. Well, it won't be a comic account. It will be comical, for sure. But anyway, thanks everybody for listening. You know the deal. Until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at @CollectedEdPod. That's Collected, EDPOD. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Today on the program, we'll be discussing Dr. Aphra, Volume 1, by Kieran Gillen, with art... That was impressive.